Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Build, Grow, and Enjoy here on BGE Radio out of Atlanta, GA. We've got a great guest with us today. Dan Perkins joins us. And I wanted to have Dan on today. We've got an incredible lineup of a great program today. And Dan Perkins with us today. Dan, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
Pretty good, actually. Let's talk a little bit about your background. You've got an incredible background. Give our BGE listeners a little bit on your background.
By profession, I have 40 years' experience of being a registered investment advisor. And I continue to do that. And now I'm in a situation where, out of the clear blue sky, I found I had a talent for writing mysteries and thrillers. So I took a class a year ago in February on Sanibel Island, and at the Big Art Center, to a class of introduction on writing mysteries and thrillers. And I went home the first day and wrote 1,000 words, the title of the book and the main characters, and I knew how it was going to end. And I have no formal training in fiction or creative writing or anything. And so what happened was I went in the next week and I said to the instructor, who had published 12 novels, is it possible that I could know the end of a story having no experience in writing? And she said, well, what do you mean? I said, I can see in my mind's eye the last line on the last page in the last paragraph.
Wow.
She said, no, that's not normal. So I wrote book one in 90 days.
Yeah.
And I wrote book two, which I knew I was going to beginning and end when I was talking to her, and book three of the trilogy, I knew how it was going to begin and end. I wrote book two in 90 days, and I wrote book three in 90 days. And so I wrote, in a period of 18 months, three full-length novels.
Wow.
And if that's not crazy enough, 30 days ago, about 30 days ago, I signed a movie deal for book one.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. So, you know, it's been an incredible ride. I'm not sure I know why, but my publicist said, just go with it. So I really believe that what happened was that the instructor found a switch in my brain that had been turned off since I was born.
Yeah.
And she was somehow able to throw it and release the talent from God to be able to write in great stories.
It's amazing. We've got Dan Perkins with us today here on the BGE Radio Network. Build, Grow, Enjoy. And Dan is with us today talking about his work, also his incredible background here. Now, let's delve into some of your books here. What was the first book? What's the first book called, and the writing process and everything behind this one?
Book one is called The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, A Terrorist Perspective. And it was written in 90 days. It's about 400 pages. And it's a story about a new terrorist organization that is formed in central Syria.
Yeah.
That has a strategic alliance with the Iranian nuclear program to recondition two old Soviet Union dirty suitcase bombs to plan an attack against the United States. And what I try to do is, this is a classic thriller. What I mean by classic thriller, sir, is that it's very short chapters. They tend to run between 650 and 1,250 words, so sometimes a chapter is one page, so it's a page turner. Lots of cliffhangers, and a lot of suspense. And it's currently available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and Smashword.com in both hard copy, paperback, and ebook. About 50% of my sales are in ebook. But I will tell you that it has a 4.8 out of 5 star rating. So,
really?
For a first time novelist, to get a 4.8 rating and consistently hold it month after month, you can go to Amazon.com, look at my book, and there's probably close to maybe, I don't know what it is now, but maybe 16 to 20 reviews from people all over the country who have written reviews about the book. Book two is called The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, and this was America Rebuilt, which kind of tells you something nasty happened. It's about 490 pages. It also took about 90 days to write, and it'll be out in about 2 weeks, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Smashwords in an ebook format. It continues the story. The bombs have been used to attack the United States, and now the United States has to adjust to this devastation of two nuclear bombs exploded, and how is it going to adjust? How is it going to protect its people, its economy, its government? I've had people tell me, understand, sir, that that book two starts off 12 hours before the end of book one.
Yeah.
And I've had people tell me that I take a breath when I read page one. This is book two, and I think I take my second breath at page 100.
Wow.
It's very hard to put down. I had one person send me an email, several people now send me an email. Tell people when you're doing radio shows, look, don't start this book after 9 o'clock at night, because you will be up all night. And so I warn people, don't start it after 9 o'clock. Book three, which will be out, would normally be out a year from now, they want the book to come out earlier, so book three, which is the final book of the trilogy, should be out sometime in late spring, and it's called, Brotherhood of the Red Nile, America Respond, and it talks about what does America do once things begin to stabilize. What does it do about the threat of terrorism on a national, on an international basis, and how do they protect the United States from even bigger attacks?
Now, what's been some of the praise and some of the feedback you've been getting on this first book? I want to focus a little bit here on this first book in this first segment here.
It's a little uncomfortable for me to say this, but many people who have read the book say it reminds them of early Tom Clancy. It's detailed, it's engaging, it's scary. On the cover of the book, there's a quote that says, "This book is as current as today's headline, but perhaps scarier than tomorrow's." People who read the book tell me that they can't distinguish whether they're watching it on a big screen, meaning a movie, or they're watching it on a small screen, meaning television news. It was an amazing experience to write. What people tell me is that the detail of the book is incredible. The characters, there's a huge ensemble cast, and it goes, again, something like Clancy, it goes back and forth, so you have a cliffhanger, and you may not know for several chapters what happened at that cliffhanger. There are also cliffhangers in book one that go into book two and into book three before they get answered. So it's a wonderful writing form in terms of being able to tell stories. I tell people, before I got involved with writing, I did a lot of creative things with pottery and oil and watercolors and acrylics and Clay and Glass. A good thriller is a picture with words, and I try very hard to paint very vivid pictures with words.
Well, it is a it is an incredible book. Now, tell us about book two. Book two. This is such a cool read. I know that there's a lot of people that when they heard that we were going to be having you on here on Build, Grow, and Enjoy on the BGE Radio Network out of Atlanta, GA, they told us, they were like, book two is one of my favorites. Why is it that so many people are taking to this book?
I think it's the road to know. I mean, when you read book one, there's only two emotions that I've ever heard of about the ending of book one. People either love it or they hate it. And a person who hates book one immediately asks me within seconds, when is book two coming out? It's a continuation of the story. It's an incredible cliffhanger in book one. And I think that people are relating to the characters. They see them as real people. And so they want to know what happens to these people in the next installment. And so there is great demand for book two to find out what happens in the next stage of this trilogy to the principal characters in the book, from the President of the United States to the Undersecretary of Homeland Security for terrorist activities, to the people who are working to try and deal with the problem of terrorism. So I think the fact that terrorism is such an important issue in our country, I think I'm providing an educational service in that I'm helping people understand Islam, its mission, its goal, the role of Sharia law and the Quran in their everyday life.
Okay, that's a heck of a lot for a book, my friend.
I know.
Love that. Why so detailed? Why so detailed on that?
That's a great question. I guess I wanted to. I wanted the people to be. I don't know if I can explain this very well, but let me try. Sometimes you read a book and you're reading it and you think of yourself as a disconnected third party. Sometimes you read another book where you feel like you're a part of the story. What I tried to do was to put three books together that are more conversational in style, meaning dialogue between the characters. And by the writer imposing you as the reader, you're like in the middle of the conversation. It's going on around you, but you're invisible to the characters, but you can see what's going on. Well, if you're going to do that, then you have to make the environment that they're in as real as possible. And so the detail, which is what Clancy was famous for, the detail adds credibility and readability to the story. So detail is very important. And I've told many people, sir, that this book, I'm not saying it couldn't be written, but without the internet, it would take a lot longer than 90 days to write this book, especially with all the technology and the detail. I think the other thing is that the scenarios that take place in book one of how the Brotherhood is discussing how to use the bomb, understand that in the beginning of the book, the leader of the terrorist organization is saying to his four lieutenants, I want you to go back and look at every attack that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda brought against the United States, whether it was on American soil or overseas, and tell us what they did wrong. Now, you have to understand that these five gentlemen are not your father's terrorists. They don't live in caves, they don't have beards, they don't ride camels, and they don't wear funny towels on their heads, and they don't shoot rifles in the air. They're all highly educated in Western educational institutions in very specific specialties. One is a petroleum engineer, one is a nuclear scientist, one is a computer scientist, one is an economics major. So that these are not who you think about, but what I'm trying to say is that they represent what I believe is the next generation of terrorists that we're going to have to deal with as a nation. I had a gentleman call me. He was reading the book about the time we were trying to decide what to do in Syria with the chemical weapon. And in the book, the president is trying to decide whether he sends in, does he bomb Syria to try and get rid of these nuclear devices, or does he not? And he said to me, you know, I just saw on the news that the president of the United States is thinking about bombing Syria to eliminate the chemical weapons. How did you know that? And I said, I didn't know that, because I wrote that book 18 months ago. But the challenge here, or the opportunity, is that the news and our life is so rich and full of stories about terrorists all over the world. There's lots to draw on. I think the biggest thing that I've learned in writing these three books is a better understanding of Sharia law. And Sharia law is how Muslims are supposed to act on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
For example, Do you know anything about Sharia law?
We know a little bit about Sharia law. We've examined it a little bit here on our on Build, Grow, and Enjoy with a few authors in the past. But I didn't mean to interrupt you. Just go ahead and finish your point there, my friend.
No, that's fine. The reason why I was asking was the vast majority, 99.9% of Americans, don't even know what Sharia law is and how it relates to your day-to-day activities. I'll give you two provisions of Sharia law. And I'm gonna give them to you, and then I want you to think about, have you seen examples of Sharia law in the last week? One of the provisions of Sharia law allows government officials, when they're dealing with infidels,
yes,
to lie, because they have a goal. In the case of Sharia law, the Muslim goal is domination of the world. But I believe that there are people in political power in the United States who have adopted and accepted the principles of Sharia law, and that's how their life is being governed. I believe we have a government that has decided that what this country needs is single-payer health insurance. And as a result, everything that government entity and people, including the president, do is to further that goal, which is what happens under Sharia law. So the fact that the president lied 25 or 27 times about, if you like your policy, you can keep it, if you like your doctor, you can keep it, period, all those were lies because, under Sharia law, the president is allowed to lie in order to further his goal. Now, I'm not saying that the president is a Muslim.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that the principles of Muslim law in the Quran and in Sharia law are infiltrating into the country. We had a situation. I live outside of New York City in the summertime.
Yeah.
You may have been aware that we had an election, a primary election for mayor in New York City.
Yes,
and one of the candidates was Anthony Weiner. And what's unusual about that situation is that his wife, Oma, is a Muslim.
Yep.
Now, under Sharia law, Muslim women are forbidden to marry Jewish men. However, the law says, unless it would fit further the goal of Islam, then it would be permitted.
Wow.
So she marries him, and he's a congressman, and wants to become mayor of New York. He gets a little problem, but the goal here was to bring him to higher and higher power, where he and his wife because of his wife, would be in a position to expand Sharia law in the United States. Now, unfortunately for him, he couldn't keep his pants up, and he didn't get elected. But that's the risk you take. But so that if you understand that, for example, there's another part of Sharia law that says in business transactions, if a Muslim is dealing with an infidel, he can lie, he can cheat, he can steal, he can do anything, and he has no responsibility for the outcome.
Yes.
It's always the infidel who is responsible. Does that sound like anything familiar where I had no responsibility, I didn't know, nobody told me? I mean, if you look around and you put this in context, there is, in fact, a process by which people are accusing other people of not doing something when, in fact, they were responsible for doing it. A great example was when we were dealing with the potential of a shutdown of the government. What did the Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid say about the Republicans? They were terrorists. They had bombs strapped on their back. They were anarchists. Those are the words that they described the Republicans. The Republicans never responded with similar rhetoric. But everything that was wrong was the Republicans' responsibility, even though the Democrats had the power of the Senate, and when Obamacare was passed, they had the power of both the Senate and the House. So take no responsibility for failure, because it's not your fault, because it's the infidel's fault. Those are examples of what I see happening in the United States, where the tenets of Sharia law are infiltrating into our society. Another thing I did, when the Boston Marathon bombing took place, I wrote a press release that said the Boston Marathon attack was more about dollar count than body count. Well, I was trying to help people understand that those two men, who looked like college students, they didn't look like terrorists, those two men for 5 days held the entire city of Boston and the metropolitan area hostage, to the point that the government said, go home, lock your doors and windows, and stay in your houses. Those two men in 5 days cost the Boston economy in excess of $1 billion. Now, so their job was to shut down the economy in Boston. When the World Trade Centers were bombed, where I used to live, outside of New York City, Osama bin Laden wasn't concerned about whether he killed 2,700 or 27,000, or he brought down the World Trade Center. What he was concerned about was shutting down the American capital market. See, what people don't understand is that reality is that terrorism is about money. And if they can get America to spend its money on security and not on the economy, they can get control of the American economy and the American people.
We've got a great guest with us today. Dan Perkins joins us. And as we wrap up here with Dan, we've got a quick final segment here with Dan Perkins this week here on Build, Grow, and Enjoy. Dan, let's talk about the third book here in the series. Let's chat about that and give our viewers a little preview of what possibly is going to be a major, major movie for you.
Well, three is titled The Brotherhood of the Red Now, America Responds.
Yep.
Now, when people hear that title, if they've read book one or book two, they think, oh, boy, we're going to send planes and bombs and we're going to do all kinds of stuff. And if that is the framework in which people read book three, they're going to be disappointed. Because what I deal with in book three is once the economy is and the country is stabilized from this horrific attack, the president begins to plan how should America respond to this attack. Now, remember that in book one, the terrorist organization was not supported by the Syrian government. They just used Syria as a staging place for their plans and their attack. But what the president is looking at is he comes to the realization about what we just talked about, is that terrorism is about money. And I'm going to commit the mortal sin of an author. I am going to tell you the last line in book three. And the last line of book three is from the president's inaugural address. And he says to the world, those countries that have supported terrorism, be aware. The terrorist groups that have taken the money from these various organizations, be aware, this is what we're going to do. We are going to come, and we're going to take your weapons, we're going to take your money, and if you resist, we're going to take your lives. That's how book three ends. And I think it's a great ending. It's a lot of fun to get from the beginning of book three to that last point, but people who have had a sneak peek at book three, I've been told that at several different points in the book, they feel like they want to stand up and cheer and ask questions, why can't we do this now in our country? So it's been an amazing experience.
Well, as we wrap up here, we've got about 3 minutes left. Tell us about the movie. How did this come about? And share any details that you can with us.
I've been talking to producers for the last 4 or 5 months, and one producer called my publicist and said, I'd like to talk to Dan. So we set it up, called me, and he said, first of all, I want to tell you, I've not read the book, but I read the cover. I said, okay, yeah, so he read a little excerpt from the book. He said, no, I was interested in the bottom of the book on the back, your background, which is where we started this interview. He said, 40 years of investment experience, the fact that you survived for 40 years tells me that you must have very good analytical skills. And your publicist has told me that you wrote 3 books in 18 months from literally square one. And he said, I think you must be one of those rare people that has command of both right and left brain at any time you want. And I said, okay. He says, I think the book almost reads like a screenplay. He says, I think it will be an exciting movie. People will be on the edge of their seats waiting for the next thing to happen. It's going to be a great visual movie. As I tell people, I've been in the writing business 19 months. I've been in the movie business now about a month. I'm an infant, but I'm enjoying the ride. And people can get the book at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or Smashwords. If you go to the book website, which is Dan Perkins, the letters AT, the word at, Sanibel, SANIBEL.com, they will be able to download the first 50 pages of book one for free. And you can also see reviews. You can see photographs of me at different events around the country. So you can download the first 50 pages. If you decide you want to buy the book, there's a link down at the bottom where you can pick up the book through Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Smashwords. It's available on ebook, Nook, and Kindle, and as I said, in paperback and hard copy. And I'm assuming that, talking to my publisher yesterday, that book two will be available in those formats probably middle of December.
Good stuff. How do we keep up with you online, my friend?
Well, if you go to the website, there's constantly stuff being updated on the website. If you want to ask me a question, there's a link where you can go and ask questions. People are encouraging me to put up a Facebook page. I'm thinking about that. As I said, this is all new to me. I really enjoy the writing process, and I really enjoy the money management process. And most important, it is people like you who have given me the opportunity to come on the air and talk about what I'm doing where I'm going and what I'm thinking about. It's just so incredible that you would give me a half an hour of time to talk about my little work.
Well, it's you're an incredible author, you're a great commentator, and a great news person, and we wanted to have you today here on Build, Grow, and Enjoy. So thanks for being with us today. Dan Perkins has been our guest. Thanks for listening to us here on BGE Radio out of Atlanta. You can get more information online at buildgrowandenjoy.com. And Dan, once again, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
Definitely. Have yourself a wonderful day.
You bet.
Dan Perkins joins us, and we want to say thanks to the listeners out there here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for making us a featured show each and every week, and thanks for spending a little time with us each and every week, whether you do it on the mobile devices, or you do it live, or you do it on tape through our archives. It is Build, Grow, and Enjoy.